It's business made simple with Bizval, exclusively on In Season.
Of course, when you hear that particular jingle, you know that I'm not alone. Good morning, Graham. How are you?
Good, Sakhi. How are you doing?
I am good. How is your May Day morning?
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks. Technically, we're the unlucky ones that have to work on Workers' Day, right? So, unfortunately, I've come from breakfast over the road with some family and some friends down from Gauteng. So, yeah. But delighted to be here today.
Likewise. Just us two?
Yep. even the building's quiet, you know, the entrance hall and everything. Everyone's sleeping in, it seems.
Listen, talk us through, what are we chatting about today?
Well, after the last interview we had with Murray Clark, it's back just to plain old me. So, but since today is May Day or Workers' Day, I thought we'd focus today's discussion on some of the trends impacting on jobs and, importantly, you know, the people, you and me, that sort of fulfill those roles. So, we all know that employment and job creation is central to any successful society. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we it's a gift we have to be able to work.
Yeah.
But in South Africa, you know, with a 30%, you know, or greater than 30% unemployment rate, it's a real challenge for us. So, you know, it's a problem that all of us, you know, from ordinary citizens through to business people and even politicians, you know, are desperate to solve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, more jobs means more taxes, more money flowing about, and hopefully, you know, it uplifts and better prosperity for all. So I guess if it was as simple as that, though, we wouldn't be chatting. So, exactly. You know, we're going to talk a bit about that today.
Yeah, fantastic. So I hear you. People are important, as is job creation. Can we break that down into a few themes?
Yeah, so I think today we're going to cover off a few topics and trends relating to workers and to jobs. You know, I hate the word workers because it's just got such a hierarchical feeling to it. But and we could probably spend a whole session on just one of these topics we're going to chat about. But I'm going to just touch on a few and give a flavor of some of the challenges and some of the themes. So, you know, the first thing we'll talk about is, you know, how the role of the worker or the employee has changed over the last few generations, the impact of mobility and communications on jobs and working, and the rise of what we call the gig economy. So we'll spend a bit of time talking about that. I think, you know, very topical, and it has been for a while, is the sort of emergence of AI, you know, the Terminator threat, so to speak, you know, and or the opportunity that creates. So we'll touch a bit on that. I think the increased focus on mental health and creating a positive work environment, I think that's so important, you know. Gone are the days of just working in a factory and, you know, I think people are a lot more cognizant that you need to take care of yourself, as are employers. So we'll talk about that. And then, you know, my passion point, I guess, is the importance of small businesses and the role that they play in creating jobs in local communities. So we'll introduce each topic and then just add a little bit of a flavor and a perspective. And hopefully, you know, our listeners take something out of it and, you know, have some interesting debates and discussions over, you know, the May Day lunch.
Awesome. Listen, I want us to start with how the role of the worker has changed over the past few generations.
Well, look, I mean, as I say, this is a topic we could spend like days talking about. Yeah. But I think if we think about it, the role of the workers transformed tremendously, you know, from the industrial age, we'll start there, through to the sort of internet age. And I think this reflects both broader societal and technology shifts. Mm-hmm. You know, in the industrial age, you know, where the sort of modern worker emerged, it spanned the sort of late 18th to the early 20th century. So it was like 200 years where workers were primarily engaged in sort of manufacturing and production-based roles. And these roles or jobs often required physical labor. Mm-hmm. There were strict schedules, you know, 8 to 5 or 5 to 10 or whatever the times were. Centralized locations, so you would go to a factory, you'd go to your place of work. And the focus then was around efficiency, standardization, and the workers played a big role in the production chain. So, you know, this era kind of saw the rise of labor unions advocating for worker rights, increased working conditions, fair wages, all of those sorts of things. And, you know, it wasn't just kind of like an overnight shift, but we sort of transitioned from there into, I guess, what we call the internet age. So this started in the sort of late 20th century already. And the role of the worker started to evolve in response to a lot of these technological advancements. So globalization became a thing, the rise of the knowledge economy, as we like to call it. So this age introduced a whole bunch of new forms of work, which was no longer necessarily just about standardization, efficiencies, costs, but it was around communication, technology. Workers became engaged in more flexible roles. Often, you know, it was more creative tasks. So things like technology roles started to emerge. Software development, if you think back, you know, to the 80s, I'm giving away my age, you know, the advent of the personal computer. You know, more recently, digital marketing, remote work, all these things became a lot more common. And what this shift allowed was for greater autonomy. So, you know, and particularly more recently, many workers able to work from home, work remotely, collaborate across geographies, and actually have more control over their schedules. So, you know, you're no longer necessarily tied to working in your local community or even your country, you know. So, yeah, I think when we spoke to Murray last week, part of what Neighborgood does and their sort of, you know, solution that they offer is accommodation for digital nomads. You know, I think 70% of their clientele are actually people from Europe, all over the world, coming and living in Cape Town. So that's an example of how, you know, that's created other opportunities for other industries along the years. I think also, you know, the internet age has brought about a change in skill requirements. So, you know, you need to have a broader set of digital skills. You know, in the past, if you put, and those things are taken for granted. In the past, you said, you know, on your CV, you would say, oh, I know how to use Word and Excel, for argument's sake. Nowadays, like putting that your CV is a bit like saying, well, I know how to walk. It's taken for granted. So you've got to continuously be learning to keep up with technology changes. But there's also, you know, the other side has gotten a lot more competitive. So you're not just competing for jobs with people in your community. You're actually competing for jobs all over the world. So it's become really important to think about how do you continually develop your skill set, not just, you know, go study something and you do that for the next 40 years. You've got to keep on learning. You know, even the notion of a university degree has, in some instances, become a lot less relevant. And it's not because university degrees in themselves are bad, but, you know, the increasing rate of change, what you studied at university 5 or 10 or 20 years ago might be completely outdated. Mm-hmm. You know, so I can remember studying Marketing 101 at university. Back then, things like Google didn't even exist. You know, the internet was basically kind of a nerdy thing that you did in the computer lab at university. It wasn't a global phenomenon. So nowadays, there's a whole industry around digital marketing, SEO, optimizing, you know, your search and all of that. So, as I say, that marketing degree that I did or that marketing course that I did 20 years ago at university has got very little relevance today. The other thing is, I guess, the gig economy and freelance workers has grown. So, you know, there's more flexibility, but there's also less job security. So this notion of a job for life has diminished. I remember listening to my parents or my parents' friends, and, you know, they would proudly talk about how they had worked at, you know, as a teacher at the same school for 40 years or, you know, they would have worked in the same bank or the same employer. And that was something that you were proud about. But the latest research actually shows that the average person nowadays changes jobs 12 times in a lifetime. And careers, like even career shifts, probably 3 to 4 times in that. So that's approximately once every 3 to 4 years if you take a 40 or 45 year working period. So that's completely different to just, you know, not even two generations ago. You know, it's a very, very different philosophy. And, you know, to summarize, I guess overall the role of the worker has shifted from a focus on manual labor, rigid structures in the industrial age, to much more flexible, tech-orientated, creative economy. You know, just think, you know, my kids are now saying they want to be YouTubers or bloggers. You know, I mean, like, my parents would have laughed at me if if I spoke about that. So, yeah, that I think is kind of, you know, just lays out kind of how the landscape for roles and jobs and workers has changed over the last sort of 30 or 40 years.
Sure, interesting, man. Now, I mean, it's really incredible how things have changed after a few generations, as you mentioned. But the rate of change is also just increasing, right? We hear a lot about AI and how this is going to impact jobs going forward. Can we chat about that?
Yeah, look, I mean, this is such a fascinating topic. And, you know, I think, yeah, I used the analogy to Terminator earlier. You know, people, I think some people have this really dystopian view of what AI can do in the wrong hands. But I think there's also, it creates a profound shift in the way we think about work and life. And it raises some really important questions about the future of jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, AI is just so prevalent nowadays, you know, in practical terms. Any of our listeners who use WhatsApp, you know, will have noticed in the last week or two, suddenly there's a little AI thing. You know, what does that actually, what does that mean? You know, so what AI does is it uses technologies, and it's going to sound very technical, but things like machine learning, neural networks, natural language. But basically what it means is it takes, you know, it's capable of automating tasks. It's capable of analyzing vast amounts of data. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, you know, a lot of these concepts are not new. If you go back to what I guess is often referred to as the father of AI, a guy called Alan Turing, there's movies and that about him. Now, this was in the 50s, you know, when they were making code-breaking machines in the World War and that. Yeah. And a lot of those principles, we now have the technology that allows those things to be implemented quickly. The computers of old weren't powerful enough to actually do these things. So AI automates a lot of that. And it's really sparked a debate around whether this is a threat to traditional employment, but it's also an opportunity to how we transform and think differently. Mm-hmm. I just want to use an example there. And, you know, I tend to kind of take the glass half full perspective on this, is that, you know, the printing press in its time, go back 200 years, was seen as so disruptive, you know. But before the printing press, you couldn't go and just mass produce books. Written books and, you know, papyrus scripts and all of those sorts of things. But when the printing press came, it allowed a whole set of new industries, the news media, journalism, all of that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Think of when the technology around radio broadcasting came in. I mean, if that didn't happen, it created a whole industry. That's why that's why we're sitting here today, right? So I think technology has the opportunity to actually create new jobs. As much as older jobs and roles become displaced, it allows that shift. But I want to just talk about a couple of the concerns. You know, so, you know, I think the one concern, particularly in a industrialized country, is the threat to replace human labor in various industries. You know, and take South Africa, we had or have a big mining industry. We've got a lot of roles which are very dependent, and those are important to society. But automation can actually takes a lot of these roles away. You don't necessarily need to have somebody underground. Yeah. As much as that was a role, sometimes it was a very difficult role, you know, in difficult conditions. You could send a machine down technically that can do that role. And if there's a rock fall, you replace the machine. Yeah. You know, so yes, it takes away roles, but then you've got to think about, you know, what are the other things that those people can do? So a lot of the skill sets that we have need to be adapted. So, you know, your manufacturing roles, give an example, self-checkout systems. Mm. We don't see a lot of it in South Africa, but if you go to the UK or you go to the US, you know, 80% of your checkout at a retail store, you do it yourself. Okay. Oh. There's no checker there. You go to a gas station or petrol station and you put your own fuel in. That's not AI per se, but, you know, a lot of those things, just think about that. AI takes the next level of jobs, and automates that. So it has a lot of implications potentially for economic and social repercussions. The threat of unemployment rises, particularly if there's low skill or routine jobs. And this can create a threat of higher inequality. High tech companies become more important, and it can lead to broader societal issues. And I guess one of the challenges with this is that you need to think differently around the education system, how you educate yourselves, and that's a slow process. It doesn't happen overnight. But as individuals, we can already start to think about that. You know, you can't wait for, you know, the government to put in new processes, yeah, the world around you to change. You'll be at an advantage if you start to think differently. Think about how you can leverage that. So I think moving on to sort of opportunities, I think AI does present a lot of opportunities for the workforce, and I want to focus on this. So, you know, if you think of jobs that exist nowadays that didn't exist, mm-hmm, there's new roles in technology, data analysis, even AI development. You know, so as AI applications expand, there's an increasing need for data scientists, machine learning engineers, mm, you know, even, you know, we're talking to CCFM, you know, things like an AI ethicist. Okay. You know, like what does that mean? Okay. Yeah. So because things can be, I'll give an example. One of the big challenges I think they had with self-driving cars in the US, mm-hmm, is if the car is driving without a driver, okay, what is the ethical decision that needs to be taken if, you know, somebody runs in front of the car? And it sounds like a morbid topic. You know, do you, yeah, hit the person that runs out in front of the car and save the driver, you know, or do you swerve and save the person in the road? You know, so those aren't easy decisions, but you need people thinking about those kind of problems. Yeah. So that's an example of roles, but it requires highly skilled workers. There's a shift in the type of work that will be valued in the future. But it can also augment human capabilities, so workers can focus more on the sort of complex and creative tasks. If you're running a business, there's just so many apps for everything. There's an app to organize your calendar. Uh-huh. There's an app to schedule meetings. So a lot of your routine tasks. I think about us on the radio today. You know, people don't need to call into the radio station necessarily anymore, and you get that engaged signal. Mm-hmm. You just send a you know, a WhatsApp through, yeah, and it pops up on the screen in front of us. If you take healthcare as an example, you know, AI can analyze medical images. It can analyze, you know, let's call it MRI scans. Mm-hmm. And it can assist in diagnosing diseases and pick up stuff that maybe, you know, a human eye might not have seen. Yeah. Okay, so there's a benefit there. But what it allows the healthcare professionals to do is the doctors can focus then on, you know, what they call bedside manner. You know, they often say the difference between a great doctor and a good doctor is a great, mm-hmm, doctor understands that they're dealing with a real person, yeah, with emotions. Okay, so, mm-hmm, the doctors can focus more on that. Often they're just too busy. They've got too much, yep, to do. So you think, oh, that doctor's rude. But, mm-hmm, actually, he's just got a lot in his mind. So, yeah, the tools help, let's say, example, medical professionals to be better at the things that really matter. You know, I think analytics can also help business leaders. So, you know, it can allow the leaders on the top of organizations to worry more about making the right strategic decisions rather than just admin. And I think it also creates a lot of opportunities for innovation and entrepreneurship. So if you think about the technology industry and, you know, the word startups, we talk about this a lot, the number of startups nowadays. Yeah, in your circle of friends, you probably chat to three or four. Oh, you know, I'm a startup founder.
Yeah.
Again, we've spoken about this on prior shows. Is, you know, when I was growing up, it was almost an embarrassment to say, oh, I've started my own business. It means, well, I couldn't get a job.
Yeah.
Nowadays, anybody can be a startup founder. Mm-hmm. So that also creates further job creation, a dynamic environment that we can all grow and learn. And I think, you know, to conclude on this sort of topic is, you've got to balance the threats and opportunities presented by AI. So, you know, at a sort of global level, macro level, we need to invest more in education and workforce training. You know, workers and employees and, you know, individuals need to think about lifelong learning and reskilling.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean you have to go spend a fortune on going back to university. There's a ton of really good content online,
yeah,
YouTube tutorials,
yeah,
the leading universities. You can go and get free courses from Harvard, Stanford, all these, yeah, kind of leading, mm-hmm, online for free. Okay. So, you know, I think government and businesses need to collaborate to develop policies that, you know, promote job creation, support displaced workers, and also address the sort of ethical and societal impacts of AI. And I think overall, it's got the potential to really reshape the job landscape, you know, and if you can focus on harnessing the possibilities of AI, but without ignoring the threats, you can't ignore the threats. It's not one or the other. But long term, you know, you have to think about it that way. And that can then foster a transition which actually creates more growth, a better quality of living, and all those things. So it's a mouthful that I've spoken through. But hopefully just seeded some thoughts around AI. And, you know, get us to think differently about it.
I mean, that is a lot to digest. And I do hope that it will be up on our podcast on the app. But, Graham, perhaps it's not surprising that, you know, mental health has become a big issue that employers and employees need to consider, right? Now, what are your thoughts on this particular matter?
Well, you know, I mean, even just trying to make sense of all the thoughts that I've spoken through about AI, even for myself, it's it's mentally exhausting. I'm not trying to make light of it, but you know, I think in recent years, because of all this complexity, we've got so much more that we need to process. You know, and this change and this rate of change is really tough. But there has been a growing emphasis on mental health and its role within the workplace. Yeah, I think people are becoming more and more aware of the impact of stress, burnout, other mental health issues. And I think importantly, employers are starting to recognize the importance of creating a positive work environment. You know, this is not just about, you know, table tennis tables in the workplace and after dinner, after work drinks and all of those sorts of fun things. But it's, you know, it's about creating a supportive atmosphere that not only enhances employee well-being, but it improves productivity. You know, we all know that when we're stressed, we tend to, you know, don't perform as well. We might perform well for a very short period of time, but then that leads to sort of burnout. So if you can create that right environment, it does improve productivity, creativity, job satisfaction, as well as a general better quality of life. I think creating a positive work environment involves a number of things. So it's about open communication. You know, so it's not a one-directional, this is your job, you will do it. It's actually listening to your employees. It's encouraging a work-life balance. You know, it's encouraging people to and that also becomes hard, like when you're working remotely. You know, so some of the benefits of the sort of the old school model of commuting to work is, you know, you get into your taxi or your train or your car and you have that transition period where maybe you're listening to the radio or you're driving, and by the time you get home, you switch off from work. You don't have a cell phone. You don't have all of that. So you have that time to recoup. But nowadays, because of, you know, the double-edged sword of this flexibility, is it's a lot harder. You can receive a WhatsApp from your boss at 9 o'clock at night, and then how do you deal with that? So boundaries become more important. I think also creating access to mental health resources from employees, you know, they need to be able to do that now. Counselors, therapists, support groups. And when employees feel valued and supported, they're much more likely to engage with their work, to collaborate more effectively. And we see that companies that prioritize mental health are also more successful at retaining talent and reducing absenteeism. People want to be there. So I think importantly, you know, from a mental health perspective as employers, is we need to promote a culture of empathy and understanding. Doesn't mean we can become, you know, pushovers, but and organizations can really help employees thrive, which leads to healthier, more cohesive workplaces. And I think long term, the focus on mental health really contributes to a more sustainable and successful business model. It's not just all about the money. It's about creating an ecosystem and environment where everyone in that ecosystem is valued, contributing. Yes, it sounds idealistic, but I think we've got to be striving towards that.
I mean, it's amazing how a little empathy and understanding can get, can go rather a very, very long way. Now, to wrap up today, could you share rather a few thoughts on the topic that is always close to your heart, that is the importance of small businesses on communities, and also specifically how these businesses contribute to job creation?
I'm glad you asked that question. And, you know, we've been speaking about some like big themes, global themes, sort of top three. And this one is kind of bringing it back to, you know, again, just come from, you know, a local coffee shop over the road in Muizenberg. So when we talk about small businesses, and it's just wonderful to see today, you know, look out and just see how on today this local community is just thriving and bustling, people in the street. Mm-hmm. And small businesses are vital to local communities. So I've said before, they serve as that cornerstone for economic growth and job creation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and unlike larger corporations, small businesses are often more closely tied to their communities. They create that sense of connection and loyalty. You know, you're actually chatting to the shop owner.
Yeah.
You know them by name. It's not just a temp who's manning the till today. And these businesses, from local shops to family-owned restaurants, they provide employment opportunities. They're crucial for reducing unemployment and stimulating local economies. So we're seeing these big global shifts, but actually these things become more and more important. You know, one of the benefits, I guess, for local communities and local small business is, if you're shifting away from, you know, you've got to be in the factory all day, mm-hmm. to you can actually work from home 2 days a week.
Yeah.
Think about the impact of that on the laundromats in the area that you live, the local coffee shops, mm-hmm. all of that during the day. So,
yeah.
So it does bring about a shift in terms of, you know, you're no longer getting lunch at the staff canteen. You're either making it at home or supporting mm-hmm. your local bistro.
Yeah.
So those things are changing. I think also, we've spoken about this before, but small businesses are significant because often they do prioritize hiring from within the community.
Yeah.
So this shift from sort of, you know, old school industrial to modern doesn't happen in the sort of vacuum. It's not binary. And small businesses are adept to providing jobs in the community, stable jobs, career opportunities. Often that's your sort of foot into the door. Mm-hmm. You know, in the older days, you were going to get an apprenticeship or at a big factory. Nowadays, you might find a little holiday job or do something in your local community. Mm-hmm. It boosts the local economy and also creates a more vibrant and diverse job market. So I think the other thing about small businesses is they tend to support other enterprises in the area.
Yeah.
So they source their goods and services from nearby vendors, and that's got a ripple effect onto the economy. So yeah, in essence, I'm passionate about small businesses playing an essential role in creating jobs, promoting community engagement, and fostering a sense of belonging in local areas. So their success is closely linked to the overall health of the communities they serve. If you want to see, is a country thriving? Look and see how small businesses and the local businesses are performing.
Mm.
I remember going to Athens in Greece, 2009.
Oh, nice.
Oh, it was around 2010, so mm-hmm. almost 14 years ago. And this was just after the economic collapse in Europe, and Greece was going through some real struggles at the time, and half of the shops were shuttered up and boarded down, and
sure.
Athens, which was a sort of bustling, thriving city, had mm-hmm. kind of lost its soul.
Sure.
You know, and you go there now and it's turned around again, you know, so those local businesses really give a community its soul, mm. so to speak.
Yeah, yes, and I totally agree with you on that. Now, today we've covered, you know, a tremendous amount. Could you just briefly, for those who are only tuning in now, summarize a few key takeouts from today?
Okay, so I'm going to pick three. As
okay.
I said, there's probably 20 things I could talk about, but I think the first one is that, you know, change is inevitable. Mm-hmm. We need to accept that, and we need to embrace that. So if we didn't, we'd all be stuck in the dark ages. You know, we'd
yeah.
all have our horse and plow and, you know, tilling our own field.
Uh-huh.
But you can't, you know, hark on for the past. You've got to look forward and ask, how does this change represent an opportunity for me? And, you know, even if you take mm-hmm. a biblical perspective on that, you know, when Christ came, he came to free us from the law. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's actually quite liberating to say, how do I look forward and live in the sort of new world
yeah.
as opposed to how do I have to live in the old world?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those two can coexist. And it's not, the second point is, it's not all about work. Our individual health and mental well-being matter. Yes, we need to put food on the table. But in actual fact, today's employee is more empowered than ever. We've got access to more resources, more learning, more support than ever. You know, this generation, mm-hmm. information's at the tip of our fingertips.
Yeah.
So, but as I say, it can be overwhelming. So we need to remember to take time out for our own emotional well-being. If our employers aren't doing that, we need to take charge of that
exactly.
ourselves.
Yeah.
And then finally, is the role of small business is more critical than ever. You know, maybe I didn't draw this link, but I think technology's made it possible to have, you know, community-based businesses that have a global impact. You know, you can have a surf shop in Muesenberg, mm-hmm. Streaming, you know, the waves to the rest of the world, and take that atmosphere. I'm using a really silly and simple example, but you know, so technology's actually made it easier to start small businesses and to expand those. So, yeah. So for me, those are the three sort of key things that I'd like the listeners to take out of today.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, today has been amazing as always. As I mentioned, that I hope that we'll have this particular chat up as a podcast on our app. We need to be I believe that there's someone who will appreciate this particular chat today. But Graham, as always, thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
You too, Sakia, and look forward to being back in a few weeks.
Fantastic.
It's Business Made Simple with BizVal, exclusively on In Season.